WJCT in Jacksonville. This is our weekly news magazine and the news podcast of the First Coast. I'm your host, Vince Kong, and this is Redux. It's Friday, February 17th. On this episode of Redux, we look at law enforcement in the River City. A recent poll shows mixed reviews for the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office as a whole, but overwhelming support for the use of police body cameras as citizens increase pressure on police to document its interactions on the street. We also talked to the folks from the Sheriff's Office as well as the police union to find out what's the holdup. Then, research shows bees are responsible for pollinating nearly a quarter of the food eaten by humans. We bring to you what's being done here in Florida to help bees avoid extinction. But first, some news. It's been a historic week for Jacksonville's LGBT community. After two failed attempts, the City Council amended its human rights ordinances to protect gay and transgendered people from discrimination. WJCT's Lindsay Kilbride has a story.
A dance party is breaking out in Hemming Park right outside Jacksonville City Hall following the vote. Rudy Alcantara and Robert Terrell are in tears. Alcantara says he and his partner are coming up on their 25th anniversary.
First time coming down here and it passed. We've waited a long time for this, so long for this, and look at this, but it validates us, it's beautiful.
Inside City Hall, sponsor of the bill, Aaron Bowman, is tearing up himself after the vote.
This is a great opportunity, people, to think now going, why have I held these prejudices? And maybe I shouldn't be doing that anymore. So I really think this is going to strengthen our community.
It's the third time a similar bill has gone before council in 5 years. The new law adds sexual orientation and gender identity to a list of already protected characteristics like race and religion in housing, hiring, and public accommodations. The legislation passed with two amendments. One made it more clear that along with churches and religious schools, some religious nonprofits will also be exempt from complying with the new law. The other ensures violators can't be punished with jail time. The bill passed 12-6 with Councilwoman Katrina Brown a no-show at the vote. Of the no votes, Councilman Bill Gulliford has been among the most vocal. He offered two amendments that failed. One would have put LGBT discrimination on a ballot for the public to vote. The other would have excluded transgender people from the law.
I'd submit to you that if you had polled this body 20 years ago, they probably wouldn't believe that we'd be debating and discussing and voting on this issue tonight.
After the vote, Mayor Lenny Curry issued a statement saying he doesn't believe the law is necessary, but he would not veto it. He returned the bill unsigned, making it automatically become law. Lindsay Kilbride, WJCT News.
As we switch gears to law enforcement in the River City, we start things off with a University of North Florida poll released earlier this month, which shows the Jacksonville residents overwhelmingly approve of the job of the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office. That is, depending on which neighborhood you're talking about and the race of the person responding to the poll. Lindsay Kilbride explains.
Lead UNF researcher Mike Bender says he couldn't predict how Jacksonville residents feel about police.
Even though you wouldn't necessarily think it, folks feel safe in their neighborhoods. Folks are supportive of JSO. And I think that's the picture that you can pull from this.
78% of respondents say JSO is doing a good job, and 88% say they feel safe in their neighborhood. Pollsters called random cell phone and landlines all over the city. Around 300 adults were surveyed from each of JSO's 6 patrol zones, and responses were weighted to reflect census demographic data. Digging into the numbers, it's clear Southside residents feel safer than residents in the urban core and northwest of downtown. And while 71% of white respondents say JSO does a good job investigating officer-involved shootings, just 44% of black respondents agree. When asked whether officers are courteous and competent, 61% of white respondents strongly agreed, compared to 35% of black respondents. Progressive Coalition activist Wells Todd says he's not surprised about the gap. He's been calling for a community review board to examine police-involved shootings. Todd says in future polls, he'd like to know how people feel about police use of force and how much experience respondents actually have with police. Bender says the 20% of respondents who don't think JSO is doing a good job is still a big chunk of the city's 700,000 adults.
It's certainly worth paying attention to. It's not unanimous support, and there are some differences. And I think that's the thing to keep in mind. But this isn't a case where large swaths of the city have great disdain for JSO.
And regardless of their approval, 93% of all respondents said officers should wear body cameras. Lindsay Kilbride, WJCT News.
With River City residents overwhelmingly in support of the use of police body cameras, Lindsay Kilbride continues her report, giving us an update on the progress the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office is making in working with the police union, as well as the public, in creating policy for their implementation.
JSO has committed to requiring officers wear body cameras. Sheriff Mike Williams told city councilors a pilot is expected to be launched in late spring or early summer. But Ben Frazier of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference says JSO should have been considering community input from day one.
It's 1 year late, is what I'm saying. This is a community issue. Where is the community?
Frazier says the SCLC has some non-negotiables when it comes to cams, including the camera policies being developed in public, as well as officers not being allowed to review their footage before filing a report, and strict consequences for officers who don't follow the policy. Williams says JSO is still in the research stage, compiling best practices from other police forces that already use cameras. JSO also has concerns to tackle, like the huge amount of storage required and possible lawsuits if footage is lost. He says community input will be included, but he doesn't have a timeline.
We have not got to that point yet. And again, the policy is going to be constantly changing. You're going to have lots of input from officers. You're going to have input from, again, the state attorney's office. You're going to have input from many stakeholders.
And the Fraternal Order of Police wants say in the policy, too. As our partner News for Jax reports, the union is asking to bargain a body camera policy. Williams says JSO's position is the policy is not subject to bargaining. Lindsay Kilbride, WJCT News.
Coming up.
The sheriff wants them out in April. We want them out in March. We want to help them get there. But if we waive our right to collective bargaining, we can never come back and get that.
We have a response about body cameras and collective bargaining from police union president Steve Zona. But first, Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry is asking the city council to approve emergency funding for new gun identification technology. The integrated ballistic identification system uses a shell's casing as a fingerprint to track down a shooter faster than ever. As WJCT's Ryan Bank reports, the new tech is expected to cost the city $250,000.
Surrounded by law enforcement, city council members, and members of the Jacks Chamber, Curry issued a stern warning regarding the new technology to would-be criminals.
If you're stupid enough to commit a crime in this city, specifically with a gun, this group of people are organized and together and are coming after you.
The technology called IBIS for short is connected to a national database called the National Integrated Ballistic Information Network. IBIS records the impressions on bullet casings found at crime scenes and matches them to firearms using the national database. Each spent cartridge has a unique imprint from a gun's firing pin. The Florida Department of Law Enforcement already uses the technology, and local law enforcement send their casings to the state office for analysis. But State Attorney Melissa Nelson says having IBIS at the local level will streamline the investigative process.
Right now, when they're submitted, when ballistics evidence is submitted to the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, JSO or other regional law enforcement can ask for a rush, but they have to prioritize cases. Having JSO have custody of it, it will allow, once they've trained their folks, to collect ballistics evidence from scenes and have a turnaround rather than months of 24 to 48 hours.
Jacksonville officials, including the mayor, will be visiting Denver, Colorado in April to see how that police department has implemented the technology. Ryan Bank, WJCT News.
Now, Fraternal Order of Police President Steve Zona was on First Coast Connect earlier this week and discussed the roadblock between the union and the sheriff's office. While the union is in favor of using police body cameras, the issue is how policy will be implemented.
The courts have held that Chapter 447, which covers collective bargaining, needs to be interpreted in a very broad scope. And the reason for that is there's no binding arbitration here in Florida. There's no picketing by police officers. It's a way to balance the playing field between employer organizations and the city. So all the conditions of our wages, working conditions, discipline, demotion, all those types of things are mandatory subjects of collective bargaining. Now, we're not trying to slow down the process of body cameras. Like I said, if the sheriff wants them out in April, we want them out in March. We want to help them get there. But if we waive our right to collective bargaining, we can never come back and get that forever and ever. If we waive that right, we might get along well with Sheriff Williams. Two sheriffs down the road, we might not get along well, and he might want to change a policy in a way that hurts our officers. We can't go back and get that right to collective bargaining back.
And one of the major sticking points between the union and Jacksonville Sheriff Mike Williams is privacy. Zona explains.
He says privacy is not an issue. I disagree. The terms and conditions of when you turn the body camera on and when you turn it off are very important to us. If we have to turn that body camera on the minute we get in the car and it stays on the whole time for our whole shift, our phone conversations with our wives, our children, our lawyer, our doctors, everybody else is recorded. And that's out there for everybody to see and people to review. Those are some of the issues we have. And again, we don't oppose body cameras.
Up next, Zona said the union will file a complaint with the Public Employees Relations Commission, the state agency that settles union disputes. This will be the first time the agency has ever taken a case over whether body camera policies should trigger mandatory negotiations. You can hear the complete interview at wjctnews.org/First Coast Connect. First Coast Connect can be heard each weekday morning with Melissa Ross at 9 a.m. on 89.9 FM or streaming on our WJCT app. You can also download the First Coast Connect podcast wherever you get podcasts. Three Jacksonville police officers have been arrested for tampering with evidence after one of them fatally shot a robbery suspect earlier this month. Jacksonville Sheriff Mike Williams announced their arrests earlier this week and said the investigation is ongoing.
I will always respond just like this when someone wearing this badge breaks the law, and I will do that every single time. This community and the men and women of JSO will always be able to count on me to protect the integrity of this organization.
Williams says the three officers were working undercover as drug buyers near the intersection of 5th Street and Barnett when the suspect, 22-year-old Jerome Allen, tried to rob him. Following the shooting, the officers conspired to remove multiple cans of beer from their vehicle, which was now part of an active crime scene. Williams says more information will be released when the investigation concludes. And finally, here's some good news for bee lovers and possibly civilization as a whole. The Florida State Beekeepers Association has successfully raised $200,000 to fund an international bee research lab at the University of Florida. WJCT first reported in April that they would need to raise this amount of money in order for $2 million in state funds and $500,000 from the university to kick in. Well, mission accomplished. The state-of-the-art lab will help fight against pollinator extinction. Here's the original report from WJCT's Jessica Palumbo.
It's morning at the CGQ Ranch in Callahan, about a half hour northwest of Jacksonville. Fifth-generation Florida farmer Curtis Quarrier is driving a motorized cart out to his beehives.
Before we leave, do you want a B-veil to put on or no?
Sure.
After stopping to put on a protective veil...
Okay, and you kind of have it on backwards, but...
We arrive at the bees. They're buzzing around wooden boxes with rows of honeycomb-covered slats.
That particular bee's stinging me.
Oh, no. Does it hurt?
Nah.
Courier makes and sells wildflower honey from about 100 hives that each hold more than 50,000 winged pollinators. He's one of a growing number of hobbyist beekeepers, folks who are helping keep the population of honeybees from shrinking so quickly.
We certainly, absolutely, certainly need more beekeepers, and so this trend has really helped.
Professor Jamie Ellis oversees bee research at the University of Florida. Despite that positive note, Ellis says bees are in trouble, as several factors have killed off 30% of their colonies worldwide over the last decade. And when bees are in trouble, we are too.
They spread pollen from flower to flower, which results in fruit, vegetables, nuts, and berries for us. So when we have these declines in honeybee numbers, clearly it's a significant issue for all of us because bees are so important to our ecosystems and to our own food supply.
He says more than a quarter of the food we eat can be traced back to the efforts of bees. That's why he's been asking for a bigger, better lab at UF.
Part of the reason for this push for this new bee lab is to be able to create the infrastructure necessary to do the type of research that is needed to reduce these colony loss rates.
And not just by his team, but by visiting scientists from around the globe. Back at Curtis Courier's house, he says he's excited about the possibilities if the State Beekeepers Association can raise the $200,000 needed to build the lab.
The research that's going to be done down in Gainesville is going to benefit all beekeepers, whether they know it or not.
The Florida State Beekeepers Association hopes would-be donors agree and help fill their pot with money. They're about to launch a marketing effort to spread the buzz. Jessica Palumbo, WJCT News.
And that's our show. You can find all of our audio and web stories at wjctnews.org. You can also stream this podcast as well as all of our on-air content on the WJCT app, which is available on iTunes and the Google Play Store. And of course, find us on your favorite podcast app and hit subscribe. I'm Vince Kong, and thank you for listening.